What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with two chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.
We're grateful to have you as a listener, and we want to learn more about your listening habits and how we can serve you better. We have a survey running right now and would love to hear from you. It shouldn't take much more than 5 minutes to complete. Go to washingtonpost.com/podcastsurvey. That's washingtonpost.com/podcastsurvey. When you're done, you can enter a sweepstakes to win a $100 gift card. We really appreciate your help. Thanks so much.
You're listening to a podcast from Washington Post Live, bringing the newsroom to you live.
Welcome to First Look, Washington Post Live's one-stop shop for news and analysis. I'm Jonathan Capehart, Associate Editor at The Washington Post. Big economic news this week that adds to the growing concern that the United States is in a recession. And here to tell us if we are or aren't is Jeff Stein, Washington Post White House economics reporter. Jeff, welcome to First Look.
Thanks so much for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Sure. So before we get into recession talk, we got to talk about this PCE number that was released this morning, just moments ago. It is at 6.8%, which is the highest it's been since January of 1982. Here's my question. Well, actually, it's two. One, what is this PCE number? And how does it differ from the 9.1% inflation number that captured headlines a month ago? Are these two different measures?
Yeah, and it's a great question. I unfortunately don't have all of the methodological differences right in front of me, but it's so baffling to get this number today on the heels of the GDP report yesterday, which appeared to be showing what some people had been hoping for, which was the economy was slowing in some ways. Maybe the demand was falling out and we were going to start seeing a moderation of inflation. And then today, as you said, we get this PCE. PCE is just another measure of inflation. It sort of, unlike the CPI, it strips out, is my understanding, fuel, and which is very volatile. So the idea is to look at sort of things that aren't just very variable and focus on things that might more clearly track the underlying things that are happening in the economy. And with the PCE report showing huge, a very high number, as you just said, 6%, it seems to push in the other direction from this question about from the GDP report we got yesterday, which was suggesting a slowdown. So this economy has been just so baffling for economists and others for so long. And today, after months and months of this, we are still being confounded by these data.
Mm-hmm. And some of the charts I've seen, fuel is up 43%. These numbers are year over year. And so let's talk about the GDP numbers, because as you said, they were released yesterday. They show the economy shrank for a second straight quarter, which meets the technical definition of an economy in recession. And I want to play for everyone how President Biden reacted to the news yesterday.
There's going to be a lot of chatter today on Wall Street and among pundits about whether we are in a recession. But if you look at our job market, consumer spending, business investment, we see signs of economic progress in the second quarter as well.
So Jeff, then, the president obviously is going to rah-rah the economy, but are we in a recession?
So this has been consuming, a lot of the newsroom's time, this question. And obviously, at some level, it's kind of just a semantic game, right? Like, what we call the recession doesn't really matter that much for what people are feeling and what they're experiencing in the economy. The White House has launched this all-out push, Biden, Secretary Yellen, the head of the White House National Economic Council, to say a recession is defined by the sort of the nerds at the NBER, these eggheads who come up with the technical definition. And the White House is accurately pointing out that they look at a much broader set of definitions than just this question of two negative quarters of GDP growth, which we have now. But these guys say, we have to look at job numbers, we have to look at wages, and all of those other statistics are inconsistent with the definition of a recession. That said, this White House all-out push to redefine, to say that this is not a recession, which is maybe valid and maybe even worthwhile politically for them because of the negative blowback from headlines saying that we're in a recession that they may have successfully averted, we are still seeing a dramatic economic slowdown. Investment was down, which is normally a sort of a leading indicator of where we're heading and maybe a sign that, that a recession is in the offing. Housing investment cratered by 14% or so in the last GDP report. That's a really scary sign. Business investment was also down. Consumption was up a little bit, but slowing. So all of these signs are suggesting, you know, maybe we're not in a recession. And again, to give them credit, in the last four recessions that we've had more than, you know, I think it's 600,000 jobs lost. Over the same period in this year, we've had over 1 million jobs gained. So I understand why the White House is saying this is not the kind of recession you're used to. That said, things are slowing and it could lead in that direction. So their attempts to dismiss that could end up looking short-sighted in the long run.
I'm
sorry,
I
have a very long-winded answer to your question.
No. But it was a terrific answer, but I'm laughing because it just sort of highlights how just confounding this situation is, not just for the American consumer who's dealing with the high prices, but for economists and economic reporters whose job it is to tell everyone, like, are we in it or are we not in it? So Jeff, the Fed chair, Jerome Powell, said his goal was to bring inflation down, which, okay, it's either 9.1% or 6.8%. No matter what, it's at 40-year highs. He wants to do that without a significant increase in unemployment, which is below 4%. And there are two job openings for every person who's looking for one job. But isn't the Fed chair's job, his task, the equivalent of trying to thread a needle in the middle of a hurricane?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really well put. The White House is projecting over and over again the confidence, and the Fed is projecting the confidence that we can tamp down inflation without causing a recession. And, you know, a lot of the economists are extremely skeptical on both sides of the aisle that is at all possible. There's one thing I want to zero in on that I think is critical to understanding what's happening here. Obviously, inflation is caused by an imbalance of supply and demand, where you have greater demand and supply is not able to keep up with it. What the Fed is doing right now by raising interest rates, taking money out of the economy, making borrowing more expensive, is tamping down on demand. Yet what a lot of people are saying, what Treasury Secretary Yellen said yesterday, which I think is accurate, a huge part of the inflation spiral we're seeing, particularly this year relative to last year, is caused by the war in Ukraine, which has caused food and fuel and other commodity prices to skyrocket. And so you have this potential mismatch, right, where the Fed is desperately trying to reduce demand to get it in line with supply, and that's what they're working on. But so much of the inflationary shock is caused by supply chain issues, supply being taken offline. And so that raises the prospect that we could have the worst of both worlds, which is really scary, right? Supply continuing to not keep up with demand, but demand also falling in a way that hurts the gains that we've had, the job gains, the economic gains, the wage gains. So threading a needle for sure, but also trying to do it with you know, a hurricane in the middle of a war, in the middle of a pandemic as well.
Yeah. The whole point of that analogy was to let everyone know that the Fed and the Fed chair's job, it's hard. Jeff, let's talk about something, maybe a little bit of good news here, especially good news for the Biden administration, and that is the deal struck between Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin on what they are now calling the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. This is your.
It feels like it's been going on for that long, honestly.
I know, right? Right? So tell us.
I was definitely
younger
when it started. Yeah.
You weren't even born. Okay, so what will the final deal look like?
The deal Schumer and Manchin reached really centers on a few key elements: healthcare, a reduction in prescription drug costs, and an extension of Affordable Care Act subsidies, climate and energy policies, primarily tax incentives for renewable energy production, but also tons of homeowner credits, so money for buying an EV, money for retrofitting your house, putting solar panels on your home, for insulating your home. So all those things. And then the last big piece of it is the tax code changes, mm-hmm. the biggest of which is a 15% minimum tax on corporations with over $1 billion in annual profits, as well as $80 billion for the badly underfunded IRS, which would bring in, even though it's $80 billion in spending for the IRS, it would bring in a net of $124 billion in new revenue because there's so much tax fraud going on right now. The administration says overwhelmingly, you know, among the richest 1%.
Oh, well, we are completely out of time. I got to ask you one more thing and just give me a yes or no if you know the answer. Senator Kyrsten Sinema, who is also, you know, someone folks have got to watch out for, has she said anything about this deal? Is she a thumbs up or a thumbs down, or we don't know?
No, thumbs sideways for sure. We don't know. She's been very mum, and we'll have to find out what her position is on the bill. She says she's reviewing it.
Okay. Jeff Stein, Washington Post White House economics reporter, thank you for coming to First Look. Have a good weekend.
Thanks so much for having me, John. You too.
All right, we're going to keep the conversation going with our opinions roundtable in just a moment. Let's go to the opinion side of the Washington Post, where we will find my Washington Post columnist colleagues, Josh Rogan and Jennifer Rubin. Welcome back to First Look.
Great to be
nice
back.
Nice to be here.
Okay, Jen, the president doesn't believe we're in a recession. Some economists agree with him. Unemployment is low. Job creation is so high. There are two jobs for every person looking for one. And yet the American consumer feels pinched, especially at the pump. How can the administration acknowledge public pain without down-talking the economy that then becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy?
It's a really good question. I was actually over at the old executive building yesterday when they had this news plus the news of the Manchin Schumer Inflation Reduction Act, which they're now calling it. And I think what they're trying to do is simultaneously project optimism about the future, but concede people are feeling pain in the short term and stress the things that they are trying to do in the short term to alleviate that pain. And just in the nick of time, in comes Joe Manchin with a bill that would cap and hopefully reduce the rising cost of prescription drugs, which is a good thing. That's going to ease the transition to clean energy, give a bunch of credits and other inducements to transition away from fossil fuels, also a good thing, and also raise some taxes from big corporations, which they can then use to plow back into what they call investments in education, in infrastructure, in new jobs. They also got a break this week because they passed the semiconductor bill, and that's going to create a bunch of jobs, hopefully in the heartland of the country. So what they're doing is this very delicate dance of saying, yes, we understand the pain, but look at these things we're doing. And in the medium term, we're optimistic. And they're trying to, I think, project that the landing, as they call it, from the Fed in a hurricane, as you put it, will be soft-ish, is how they put it. I think they realize that they're not going to get away with no pain, but they hope that it's relatively painless.
Right. I mean, the whole point of raising interest rates is to apply a little bit of pain to keep people from spending and hopefully bringing prices down. But Josh, when it comes to inflation, we got this brand new inflation number, different from the 9.1%. Oh, and you know, actually, I see that Josh is frozen. So we're going to, Jen, I'm going to throw this question to you while we figure out what's going on with Josh. When it comes to inflation, one of the things the administration and economists point out is that inflation is a global issue, with the United States actually faring better than other nations, particularly Western industrialized nations. But that's no comfort to the American consumer, is it, Jen?
Oh, wait, it's really.
Hold on, Jen. I think I heard Josh. Josh?
Hello.
There he is. Did you hear the question, Josh?
I did. Sorry for those technical difficulties.
Answer. That's quite right.
Yes. So, you know, although it's very nice, as Jen said, that for the Biden administration, that they got a couple of good economic headlines this week for a change. But, you know, as she pointed out, all of those medium-term benefits, none of them are going to show up before voters go to the polls. And even though election inflation rather is coming down a little bit, it's still coming down from a really high place. And, you know, it's not as if inflation goes away. Those price hikes that people see in their everyday lives are never going away. They're there forever. Okay. And for the White House to go out and say, well, your life is going to get worse, but a little bit slower now, is not a really good campaign ad. So I don't think the headlines are going to last until the election, and I don't think the benefits are going to come before the election. So we're going to have basically the same situation which we have now, which is a lot of people feeling a lot of pain, and nothing that happened this week is really going to make a big dent in that, in my opinion.
Jen?
Well, I think you can look at it a little bit differently, which is that it's the direction of change. They're very pleased that the gas cost number is coming down. And they are, I think, hopeful that consumers are going to keep spending, which they are, but at a lower rate. And I think what they are trying to do, like any administration, is say, yes, we have these problems, but we're working on them. We're making progress. And for those people who, for example, were unemployed a year ago, don't have a big commute, they're probably doing, frankly, a little bit better. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who are not doing better. Perhaps they never lost their job. Now they have they're back full-time working in the office, have a really long commute, are paying a ton for gas, and their bottom line is worse. And that's why they keep pushing these other things that say, we understand you're having difficulty paying your bills. We can't really solve the inflation problem, but we're going to do these other things to try to mitigate that pain. We're going to release oil from the strategic reserve. We're going to try to control the price of prescription drugs. We're going to try to give you an alternative to high fuel prices that you'll need to heat your home in the winter by helping you convert to some clean energy choices. So it's a balancing act. It's not easy. And you know, I cannot stress enough, as you were saying with Jeff earlier, that this is completely uncharted territory. The White House admits it. I think the Fed admits it. The numbers are all going like different ways. And really, they have not dealt with something like this. Normally, you have high unemployment if you're going to have a recession. Normally, you don't have high inflation at the time that inventories are coming down, for example. So, you know, you have to have a little bit of sympathy for these people that this is just wacky stuff. This is a once in a generation kind of problem generated by a once in a lifetime pandemic. So, frankly, they have their work cut out for them.
Mm-hmm. And not to mention, a war being waged on Ukraine by Russia, which is also impacting oil and gas supplies around the world. Let's talk about the situation between the United States and China. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi might be going to Taiwan. She hasn't announced the trip yet, whether she's going or not. And this has rankled the Chinese government. Josh, you tweeted this week that if the speaker makes that trip, the governments in Washington, Beijing, and Taipei will just have to accept it. Why?
Right. Well, Jonathan, I'm going to break some news on your show right now. Diplomatic sources confirm she is set to go, and it will be on the early side of her trip within the next few days. She's also going to Tokyo and Seoul, but the current plan, and again, until she lands, you know, things could change, but is that she's going. And the Biden administration and the military are making preparations to support that trip. And their several weeks long effort to convince her not to go has failed. And the Chinese government's bluster and threatening and has also failed to deter her. Now, we don't know what they're going to do. You know, they have a range of options to respond. Some of them could be provocative towards the United States. Some of them could be provocative towards Taiwan. Some of them could come after she leaves. So there's a lot of unknowns. But basically what happened was that the Biden administration took this secret trip and exposed it when President Biden on the tarmac confirmed it. And after that, Nancy Pelosi and her staff felt that they were backed into a corner and that they weren't about to back down. So now the trip is on. Now, the reason I say that they're going to have to accept it is because, you know, we have a principle here, which is that Americans can go to other democracies when they want. okay? And dictatorships that are near those democracies can't tell you not to and punish you if you go. And that's been the principle this whole time. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't risks. I'm not saying that the Biden administration doesn't have to consider the geopolitical implications and this and that. Those are all valid arguments. But at the end of the day, if Nancy Pelosi wants to go to Taiwan, Nancy Pelosi is going to go to Taiwan. For her, it's a capstone on a decades-long career in U.S.-China relations. She knows she's not going to be Speaker next year, probably, right? And she might not even be in Congress next year. So this is, she sees this as her last chance. She sees this as a legacy item. Of course, the Biden administration doesn't care about Nancy Pelosi's legacy. They care about maintaining predictable and stable U.S.-China relations that are in a world of rising tensions. And those two interests are against each other. And if you're from the Chinese side, you can't even believe that the president of the United States can't control Pelosi, because in their system, the president kills or jails anyone who doesn't do what he says. But they don't understand that, like, in our system, actually, the president can't tell the Speaker of the House what to do, even if they're in the same party. And that's exactly what's the case right now.
Right. And John, let's just be clear. Speaker Pelosi isn't doing something that is out of the ordinary for a House Speaker. She will not be the first Speaker of the House to go to Taiwan.
Not only that, the point of having regular congressional delegations go to Taiwan is to maintain a status quo where we have a one China policy, which means that we recognize Beijing's government as the government of China, but we have a robust diplomatic unofficial ties with Taiwan. That's the policy. So it's not a change of the policy. Now, President Xi Jinping spoke to President Biden yesterday and complained about this and said, "Those who play with fire will get burned." That's what President Xi said. And that's a threat, okay? And if you just think about that, well, maybe when the Chinese, this is my opinion, when the Chinese Communist Party tests our resolve, maybe the best thing to do is to show resolve. And that's, again, that's not to say there's no risk. That's not to say that the Chinese Communist Party won't do something reckless. They might. But that's on them, not on us, not on Nancy Pelosi. And now that she is going, as I've announced and broken the news here live on your show for your viewers, it's important, I think, for the Biden administration to pivot from leaking about the trip to supporting her, because that's what's about to happen in the next coming days.
And you anticipated a question I was going to ask you, but I'm not going to ask it. But it was about the fact that President Biden and President Xi spoke yesterday on the phone for 2 hours, which, you know, I can barely stand a conversation on the phone for longer than 2 minutes, but for two world leaders to spend 2 hours on the phone like that is very significant. Jen, I want to bring the conversation back stateside and talk about two other people who not directly are like this, but were like this in Washington for the first time since they left Washington at the end of the Trump-Pence administration. And I'm talking about both Donald Trump and Mike Pence being in town, giving different speeches. I want to start with Donald Trump's speech, because he gave a rather dark, dystopian, American carnage on steroids type speech. And in a column this week, Jen, you wrote, "If Trump feels a tad claustrophobic, it's because the walls are closing in." What walls exactly, Jen?
Well, he's got a bunch of them. First of all, we got word that the Justice Department really is investigating him for possible criminal violations. Many of us were concerned that the Justice Department had gotten cold feet or were dragging their feet. And in fact, they're plunging ahead. The other big news was that both Vice President Pence's head counsel, Mr. Jacobs, and his chief of staff, Mark Short, went before a federal grand jury. Those people are going to tell the grand jury about the pressure campaign on their boss, and that is directly aimed at Donald Trump. That was part of the coup, a large part of the coup. So he has the grand jury to worry about. He has an increasing parade of cooperating witnesses, that is, people who are willing to talk because it's getting a little hot in their neighborhood, so they'd like to strike a deal before they're on the target list. And, of course, he has the January 6th committee, which, frankly, did much better than many people expected in terms of getting out information and isn't done yet. It's going to come back in August, most likely in September, and tell us more. And on top of that, you then have a scandal where it appears that the Secret Service and now two high-ranking officials in the Trump Department of Homeland Security somehow lost, destroyed emails, texts. That's another lead for the Justice Department. Were they told to destroy them? Are they just super incompetent and coincidentally incompetent? We're going to find out. But he has a lot of incoming at him. And although there's not been a breakthrough moment when the entire Republican Party throws up their hands and said, enough, we're done with him, you do sense that they're tired of this, that they're tired of him, they're tired of the drama, they would like to move on. And that's why, although they say they support him, you're seeing increasingly strong support for alternatives in 2024, like Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida. So I don't think you're going to see a revolution in Trump thinking, but I think you're going to see a slow sap of support and enthusiasm for him. And that's, of course, as important to him as any of the legal implications of the current investigations.
You've come up with the phrase that I'm going to try to use myself, coincidentally incompetent.
Yes.
I got to get you on one more thing, and this is the Mike Pence side, because on the same day that Trump spoke, Mike Pence also delivered a speech laying out what he called a freedom agenda, and that he couldn't be more proud of the Trump-Pence record. Will this strategy of trying to chart a new path while not still clinging to Trump's record as president work with Republican voters? I mean, I noticed you mentioned folks, Republicans looking at, say, Governor DeSantis, but you didn't say looking at former Vice President Mike Pence.
Other than his blood relatives and employees, I'm at a loss to think of somebody who would be a Pence voter. The party is either made up of people who have had it with the Trump years and really want to move on and understand that by and large, Pence was attached at the hip to Trump, or they are people who are fanatical Trump supporters and say, Mike Pence betrayed him. We would have had the presidency still if not for him. So I think this entire presidential run is, really ridiculous. I think what he's actually trying to do is kind of restore his reputation and show that he was a smart conservative and a responsible conservative. But I think his chances of winning the presidency, winning the nomination, frankly, are very, very small. If the party wants to move on, they're not going to move on to Mike Pence. They're going to move on to somebody else.
Well, Jennifer Rubin, Josh Rogan, we are completely out of time. As always, thank you for coming to First Look. Oh, extra thank you, Josh, for breaking news on First Look. Both of you have a great weekend.
You too.
Thanks for listening. For more information on our upcoming programs, go to WashingtonPostLive.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.